You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Get lost.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Ow, from New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental from my apartment in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Matt Doyle. What's up, boys? It is Monday, November 2nd. It is a big day. There's a big reminder. We have a big show. Decision Day presented by AT&T is coming up next Sunday. A lot of decisions to be made, but I hope there is one decision out there that you're not having to, I don't know, waste any brain power on, and that is voting. If you have the right, if you have the opportunity, if you don't have any excuses, which you shouldn't have, go do that. I have saved my vote early sticker to slap on the chest right here. Just bam, just feeling good about that. So that's my message.
This is why Weeby's a Coastal Hollywood elite, because he saved the sticker for the moment he got
exactly. Well,
the drama.
Yes, just pound it on. Just drive it home. Let it never leave this shirt. Look, I hope everybody out there has a plan. I hope that you followed through on it in the early voting period, if that's possible for you. If not, of course, November 3rd is election day. No matter where you stand, make your voice heard. It's a civic duty for a reason. We all have an opportunity. And I think it's important that we all take advantage of that. So I hope you do.
There's only one reason you should vote. I mean, I think if everyone listens to this show, you're like us. You like to complain about stuff. And you like to argue about stuff. And if you don't vote, you don't get to complain. You don't get to argue. And that's the best part of everything. So you got to get involved.
Feels like that's not the spirit of the show at times. That arguing and complaining happens even when people maybe don't vote or forget to vote or vote in the wrong way. I'm not speaking about anybody but myself here. So yeah, go vote. Go get that done. Decision Day presented by AT&T coming up on Sunday, 3:30 p.m. Eastern and 6 p.m. Eastern are the two blocks of games on that day. Of course, simultaneous in both conferences. There's a pre, mid, and post-game show on the MLS app, MLSsoccer.com, YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. So go check that out. We'll lead you into the day, give you all the stakes, interviews from around the league, react to that first block of games, guide you into the second block, and then basically tell you exactly where things stand ahead of the Audi MLS Cup playoffs. I'm also told by producer Chris that the FS1 window is 6:30 Eastern and not 6 p.m. Eastern, so the tradition of nobody knowing when game starts continues. Big news here.
Dallas, is Kalen going to be on that show?
Is Kalen going to be on that show?
Is Kalen supposed to be on this show? Doesn't he do Mondays?
He does do Mondays.
Is this an off day for him? I didn't see him in the schedule taking vacation today, so I didn't know. Sorry, continue.
Yes.
I didn't mean to
throw
you off.
There was a text message. There were some various reasons.
Did you see somebody? Never mind.
Yeah, we'll leave Kalen. We drag Kalen often enough for missing this
show. It just feels like with Decision Day coming, it's a big part of the season. So you want to know your best 11, you want them to be there, right? Like, this is when you show up. I'm just saying game day players.
Sometimes managers make tough decisions. Sometimes managers just have to deal with injuries, and I'm doing what I can with the two of you right now. Let's get to it. Dallas didn't put an X next to their name. They trolled the Sounders for saying that they wouldn't put an X next to their name, but Dallas are into the playoffs. It's the lone team that made it in over the weekend. A couple teams are out. Cincinnati is the only team out in the Eastern Conference. RSL is out. Houston is out. Vancouver and LA are kind of out, but still, by the power of math, still technically in. They're waiting to see if San Jose and LAFC reschedule the game that they had scheduled to play for Wednesday. Of course, there's COVID with LAFC, some positive tests. So that game got at least postponed, and we'll see what happens with it as it pertains to midweek. In the East, 8 of 10 berths are taken. In the West, it's 6 of 8 berths, so 4 up for grabs. Decision Day, you got those 4 spots. You have seeding, of course. You have the supporter shield. You have the golden boot presented by Audi, though Diego Rossi looks like he's probably going to capture that one. Though, again, LAFC, if they don't play, you open the door for some other folks. But what this weekend did give us, to just get into the soccer finally, is a little taste. It was cold. It was miserable. It was intense. It was two teams with their best players on the field in Columbus. And it felt like one of those games in October or November when it was win or go home and the level was high and the intensity was high and everybody cared and the game was on ABC. It was a good early taste of what these playoffs might be like. And by the way, it had huge stakes itself. Union thought they could seal the shield. They didn't do it. Now we have to wait till next week. But this game, it felt right. It felt like what we've been waiting for, I feel like, all season long.
Yeah, it's some, I think early, like 15 minutes in, I turned to the only person I can spend time with because I'm stuck in my apartment and was like, whoa, this feels like a soccer game. Like, this is cool. And I think we felt it a little with Philly-Toronto last week. There was that energy, or 2 weeks ago, who knows what time is anymore. There was that energy to it. It kind of had that cold under the lights vibe, but this felt like MLS Cup to me. Like, it was an afternoon game, Sunday, the snow's coming down, as you said, and the energy to the game was there. And the will to win it was there, not to go out and make sure you didn't lose it, from both teams. And Philly's direct, and they're energetic, and they want to win Supporters Shield. And Columbus, there's a lot of things you could say about Columbus. One of the things that's enjoyable and a little frustrating about watching them is you know exactly what they want to do. And they do it well sometimes, and it's fun to watch when they do. And when they don't, it's frustrating that they just keep trying to do the same things. But there's talent in that team, and Zellerion and Nagbe back. It's fun to watch all those pieces together. And this game had it all, and it got me excited for the playoffs because I've been watching soccer now for 5 months in COVID-19, whatever. And the games, just a lot of times they're entertaining. There's good soccer, but it's not all there anymore, you know, because you don't have fans. You don't have the full environment. I thought El Clasico, you know, Real Barca was bad soccer, but it had a little bit of that bite to it. And I felt it here for this one. And I was like, oh, so this can happen in this environment. And now I expect to see it from all the teams going forward.
And it was enjoyable to have the Caleb Porter soundtrack as well.
Oh, yeah.
It was, I agree with David, it was a really well-played game. And I thought tactically it was interesting that when you're going against that diamond of Philly, you want to station your fullbacks high because you want high and wide on the touch lines because you want to break the diamond apart. You want to make them come out. And honestly, Columbus weren't ever able to really do that throughout this entire game. Philly was able to control where it was played and what, you know, the tempo was played at. They were always in the gaps between the center backs, Mensah and Keita. And Mensah, who has been monstrous all year, was he had his worst game of the season. And
you're Nagbe, welcome, Columbus fans.
I was going to say, that was the David Goss, Charlie Davis jinx right there. Just really went in on Jonathan Mensah. And after he hasn't missed a minute all year, just misplacing passes, falling down, charging people over, but got the win.
But got the win. And so this is the thing with Columbus. They have been sort of like scuffling through summer and early autumn, nursing injuries, whether it was Zellerion, Nagbe, Jossie the last couple of games as well. But Eloy Room has been missing a lot of time as well, and he was back in this one. And, Eloy Room was awesome last year when he came in. He was the player of the week because this was this close to being just Philly going rampant and winning 4-1 and Room time after time after time. And to be fair, he got a little help from the crossbar, but he was able to keep Columbus in that game. And then when the gap appeared, they were ruthless enough going forward to exploit it. And then it was not like a vintage crew performance, but it was, if your full team is healthy, you can get this type of win where you don't play well and you just have enough talent to sort of like shoulder through it and gut it out and get the 3 points. And you can do it even against a team as good as Philly, and Philly are really good. On the flip side, look, the elephant in the room here is Joe Bendik, because Philly have been relatively healthy all year long. We know they're missing Jose Martinez. Jack Elliott, I thought, filled in really well. We know that they're missing Ray Gattis. I thought Mbaizo filled in really well. They're missing Andre Blake now. I think Andre Blake saves both those goals. I think if Andre Blake is playing, this one ends 1-0 or something like that. And Joe Bendik has had, you know, he's played 15,000 MLS minutes. He's played in some big games. He's a veteran. He has real, you know, experience in this league. Next weekend, with the Supporters Shield on the line again, is the biggest game of his life. It absolutely is, and it's arguably the biggest game in the history of this Philly Union franchise, because they played well enough to win it yesterday, and if Andre Blake had been there, they would have. And now they get a second chance at that, and if they don't get it done, then all the work they've done this year, I mean, it would be crushing to them if they don't get the Supporters Shield after this.
I think it would be crushing in addition to the work, because also the history, mm-hmm. the three U.S. Open Cups, the Almost. I mean, I remember being in Houston and sort of feeling the emotion coming out of them mm-hmm. of like, you know, when Trusty, I believe, made the mistake and just how it kind of slipped away. And they were like, God, this was the time. This was the one. This was the fourth time, as you wrote in your column, Doyle, that they entered a game with 90 minutes to play for silverware and weren't able to get it done. There is a second chance for them. They're going to take on New England at home, where they haven't lost this year. I don't think they've drawn either, on ABC on Decision Day. So that is probably the biggest game to watch when it comes to just straight silverware implications. Toronto, of course, have an opportunity too, because they got a late win, maybe a little bit controversially because of a PK call against Inter Miami. But on Joe Bendik, the first goal, I thought, probably should have done better, but it's a really good hit by Arthur, and I would actually put the fault more on the pressure in the midfield than I would on Joe Bendik. The second goal, though, Luis Diaz had his moment, man. He hasn't had many this year, but he had his moment. It was a beautiful cross. The moment he hit it, I honestly was thinking, and maybe this is completely like BS, but I was thinking, being in the stadium watching Cristiano Ronaldo hit the cross against the U.S. in the World Cup, where it was just like, this is going to work out. I'm not saying it was a Ronaldo cross. I'm not saying he's Ronaldo. I'm just saying the trajectory of the cross and the cut to the back post. I am saying Christian Namath is the next Nani.
Yeah, there you go.
But I didn't even know the man played for the Crew, and he's out here scoring game-winning goals.
Game-winning goal.
So is the blame on Bendik for coming out at all, and he should have stayed in goal, or that he should have read it better and come out and taken
it? I think he should have read it better and come out and taken that. Yeah, and I going back to the Luis Diaz thing, this is why I think Columbus are actually going to be a bad matchup for Philly if these two teams meet in the playoffs. Okay, remember what I was saying about how you want to station your fullbacks to break apart a dime? If you don't do that with your fullbacks, you need wingers who can stay on the touchline, not inverted, but actually still be dangerous. And if you look at the way Diaz plays, he's never comfortable coming inside. He's like Jürgen Damm. He's just not comfortable in the central channel. But he has lightning pace, and he's a freaking excellent crosser of the ball on the run. And this is, you know, if you can slip him in behind that midfield diamond and in front of the fullback and get him going at pace, that is real problems for the Union. And I thought it was a really good sub by Caleb Porter. And like, you give yourself a chance to win when you have that kind of tactical flexibility and ability to bring in game changers.
If you're a Union supporter, how much are you looking at Joe Bendik and saying, as you said, Doyle, if we had Andre Blake, which he has a broken hand, you probably will not have Andre Blake. Or if you do, you'll have a goalkeeper with a broken hand. Versus the other side of this, which is they did have a lot of opportunities. And yes, Eloy Room made some great saves. I think the Mbizo save where he got down low and got like the barely fingertip on it to take it wide was the best of the bunch. But they had opportunities and they didn't finish them. Like, it's a two-sided coin here for the Union. It's not like they just got a blinder from Room, which it was. They had opportunities. They just didn't finish.
Yeah, but they put up five on Toronto. And I know Ray Gattis said, like, it wasn't the full Toronto team. But they can't win every game 5-0. And they're not going to in the postseason.
But isn't
and you're
this
not
going to
do it in the semifinals and the final.
For them, if they don't have the eraser and Andre Blake, and they aren't, quote-unquote, consistent with that attacking production, that leaves the door open in the playoffs because it's one and done. It's no longer like, hey, we have two legs, we'll come back home and everything will be all right. Like, that's sort of the risk. And it's also why maybe the shield is so important, because that is something that you can control and take yourself, as opposed to it being a random day and maybe Joe Bendik's on, or maybe your strikers are off, or maybe the other team has a blinder. I don't know. I think that's got to be the fear for the Union, right? Is
absolutely,
that like...
Absolutely. If you have an all-star caliber goalkeeper and you go down to your backup, that's absolutely the fear. And because they don't have Carlos Vela last year or Raul Ruiz Diaz or Joseph Martinez, they have been a really, really good team. If and when they win the supporter shield, they will absolutely have earned it and absolutely have deserved it. But the margins are thin now. They have to finish those chances. It becomes that much more of an imperative, and they didn't get it done at Columbus. And now, you know, next weekend it's New England Revolution with another great goalkeeper at home to try to get the job done.
Can I, off the Matt Turner for the USMNT moment, take you on a sidebar and ask this, and you can tell me if it's recency bias. I think at the beginning of the year, Arthur mentioned that he was close to citizenship and interested in playing for the U.S. And everyone was like, not the Brazilian that I wanted. I know he scored, and so I'm pumped about it. But is this a guy at 24 that would be interesting in the U.S. national team?
I think he's fine. I don't think he's a...
It's fair.
Yeah, he's like January camp invite.
That's fair. Hmm. Okay.
I do look, the midfield they have, and we'll get to NYCFC in a second. I think they're both similar in this way. When they're healthy, they're very, very difficult to deal with. And I didn't actually think that Darlington Nagbe was at his sharpest in this game. And I didn't know
if he lost the ball one time.
Yeah. I was like, is it the condition? Like,
whoa, is Nagbe sick?
Yeah. Like, what's wrong with you, man? Like, hold on to this thing. But he didn't make as many of the sort of like bursting runs up to open up the field and to find what wouldn't be like, you know, the pass for the shot, the key pass. But the past two before or one before as often as I'm accustomed to. But I think if you give those guys an opportunity to play into this, maybe the crew come into the playoffs thinking exactly what Caleb Porter told us way back before at MLS's back, where it's like, it's only about one thing for us, and that's MLS's cup. They have the ingredients. We'll see if they all come together. I do want to ask you guys, who's the All-State goalkeeper of the year, though? We had a real spirited discussion about defender of the year. I don't know if Jonathan Mensah was listening, but I hope
there's anyone that wants me to curse them. Feel free to send it in.
The defender of the year is either Anton Tinnerholm or Walker Zimmerman. Everybody else is fighting for third. Anyway,
get out of here.
Give me the Anton Tinnerholm case. I understand it, but I think we should vocalize it.
For the vast majority of the year, he was NYCFC's best defender and best attacker. Nobody had a larger workload. And was more.
But isn't that just on NYCFC?
It was more integral to his team success, other than maybe Walker Zimmerman. And it wasn't just, oh, he had this large workload. It's that he was, best or second best at attacking as a fullback, best or second best at defending as a right back as well. For a team that is probably going to have a home game, not for a team that's an also ran.
Do you, shady on Nashville. We'll get to them later. Do you think there is any chance that an outside back can win Defender of the Year in this?
Nope. No, he probably won't even make best 11. That's just the way it works. Because
who are the best 11 defenders?
Walker, the best 11. So I think it's Hollingshead at left back. If you want to do it actually.
Yeah, no, we should. Who do you think will get voted? Who do you think will
it? It'll be three center backs.
But who's the third center back?
It'll be.
Probably McKenzie, right?
Oh, Mark McKenzie,
Mensah, and Zimmerman. Right. Yeah.
Okay.
But not in Extra Time World. Not when we control the variables. That's why we have the Continental Awards.
We respect fullbacks and D-mids on this show.
Exactly. We are filling in. We are honoring them when no one else will. We're doing our duty. We're fighting the good fight. We'll talk more about the Continental Awards in just a little bit. But Goalkeeper of the Year, we kind of skipped over that. It's Andre Blake. Would you put, who else? Eloy Room, but he was hurt, so he has it's a tough case there. Matt, Quinn, you're going to say Matt Turner.
Mm-hmm.
Matt, stick together. Pedro Gaese, does he have a case here?
Nope.
You don't think so?
Pedro Gaese doesn't have a case.
No.
Why not?
I think he's been good. I think a lot of the guys you've mentioned have been good to really good. I think Sean Johnson's had an excellent year. I just think Turner's ability as a shot stopper separates him, even though he actually had a terrible game this weekend. He gave up two goals that I thought he could have done better on. He has kept the Revs in games that they just didn't belong in at times. And then he basically never makes mistakes. Like, the only knock on his shot stopping is he has a slight propensity to get chipped. But that's based upon positioning and being super aggressive coming out, which I would always rather have a goalkeeper who's a little more aggressive than one who stays on his line and gives up a bigger angle.
This is one of those years, I feel like, and I guess last year was a little bit too, because I never thought Vito Manone was going to win that award. But this is a year where I don't know that there is a obvious candidate, because you have some wrenches thrown in the process. Voting isn't, I believe, due until right after decision day. And recency bias is a very real thing in these awards. With Andre Blake being out, maybe that could reinforce the fact that he was this good.
If they lose again and it falls on Joe Bendik, there's a decent chance everyone just gives it to Andre Blake because they're not really paying attention and they're fine with that. Which, by the way, he would deserve because of the performances he's put in over the course of this year. That doesn't make him better than Matt Turner, because I agree with Doyle. But Andre Blake's had an incredible season. And he's come far from the mistakes we saw over the last 2 to 3 years.
Yeah. So Andre Blake has been really good, but Andre Blake during the MLS's back tournament was insanely good. Like what he did over that six game stretch for Philadelphia was unreal. Since then, he's been good. He hasn't been at the same level that he was in July.
Oh, breaking news, as we have discussed the Supporters Shield and a CCL spot at stake. I have not thought about this tournament, though it remains in my heart for a long time just because it was in so much limbo. But CONCACAF finally coming out and saying they're going to resume December 15th to 22nd. So a nice little holiday gift for the folks out there, including us. The format here makes sense. Semifinals, finals go to single elimination. And then in the quarterfinals, you have some teams that have played a leg, some teams that have not. If you have played that first leg, it will basically just be the second leg. If you've not played any games so far in your quarters, like I believe LAFC and Cruz Azul, it will just be single elimination. Meanwhile, that's a big gift for Atlanta United.
Yeah. So what we're telling you is a week after the MLS season ends, Atlanta United is going to have to go play Club America at a random venue. Already down 3-0. So Atlanta United 2 is making their CCL debut in 2020. And we
I just want to say I'm a big John Gallagher guy. Big John Gallagher guy. This is going to be his coming out party.
He's already had his coming out party. Yeah, this is the way 2020 was supposed
to be. John Gallagher is a starter on a non-playoff MLS
for Atlanta United. Okay, let's talk a little bit about the teams that are not in, that would like to be in, that are hovering around in purgatory. There are five in the Eastern Conference. Two spots remain. Right now, Montreal Impact are in the ninth position, Chicago Fire in 10. Then it's Atlanta, Inter Miami, and DC United. Of course, as we all know, it's points per game now, so the math gets much more complicated because some teams have one game to play, other teams have two games to play. It's just it's a lot to take in. So I would suggest you go to the forum guide at MLSsoccer.com or just stare at the standings and don't blink for like 20 seconds and see if it all just kind of uploads simultaneously. I'm going to simplify all this. I'm just going to ask you guys who you want to see in the playoffs. Forget what the schedule is. Forget the scenarios. Forget how they can get in. That's minutia that I can't be bothered with right now. I just want to know, for the quality that we want to see come November, whatever, when the playoffs start, who do we want to see in those play-in games? And why is the only team you should name the Chicago Fire?
Yeah, that was the first team that was in my head. Because Chicago's they have 11 guys on the field who can really pass the ball. Well, 10 and a goalkeeper. And that is like what Rafael Vicky is trying to make his team's identity. And they have like good intricate off the ball movement. They don't have a ton of difference makers in the final third, but they managed to play pretty soccer anyway. And then they just have this ability to create disasters for themselves in spite of all that. They're entertaining. I really love watching the Chicago Fire this year. And I know it's a lot like last year in that they played a lot of good soccer and don't have the results to show it. But like maybe it just feels like a team that can catch lightning in a bottle a little bit and put on a show and maybe win a game or two and throw a monkey wrench into, you know, one of the favorites' plans to win a cup.
So we want to talk about lightning in a bottle? 4-3 at New England. Let's go, Chad Ashton. DC is here. They are the Barcelona of MLS. There's only one team you should root for. It is chaos.
They lost 4-3. Yeah. You know that.
I like goals.
Modern Barcelona.
He didn't ask who was going to win MLS Cup. He said, who do you want to see in the playoffs? I want to see the team that concedes 4 goals. They won 3 in a row under Chad Ashton, and they lost 4-3 at New England. I respect it. The game is real, you know? It's always moving. It's always changing.
That's I want to throw something out there for Chicago Fire because we moved on too quickly. And I was thinking there's the Chad Marshall theorem that was coined on this show, Bobby Warshaw. But there should also be the Francisco Calvo theorem, which is exactly what you were saying about Doyle, which is inexplicable ways to find a way to cause disaster of your own making.
Although he got hosed last week, which was amazing.
But that's part of the Francisco Calvo theorem, is that he would get hosed in that way. It would happen to him and not other people. And that is the one thing.
And they still stayed in that game. They only lost, 2-1 at Philly?
Yep.
Down a man 60 minutes. And they were down 1-0 when it happened.
And they played some good soccer along the way, even though they were down to 10 men. Like, they're a weirdly good team that's not actually good. It's bizarre, and I love watching them play.
How about Atlanta United? How about Inter Miami? Any desire to see them in a playoff match?
The only desire for me with Inter Miami is because I said that it wouldn't make the playoffs. So, just for the sake of that prediction, but honestly, that they've been one of the league's most disappointing teams because for all that talent that they have, they're still most of what they do, it feels like it comes down to just like, oh, is Pizarro going to do something individually brilliant? Is Higuain going to do something individually brilliant? By the way, Higuain at this point has played more minutes than Chicharito and has the same exact amount of goals. So, you know, Chicharito has deservedly taken a lot of stick for his non-performance in 2020. It's getting to the point where Higuain deserves that as well, because the thought was that when he comes and when Matuidi comes, okay, and Gonzalez Pires, who has been terrible this year, when they all come mid-season, all those one-goal losses that they were suffering were going to turn into one-goal wins, because they weren't playing great soccer, but they weren't bad. They weren't getting blown out. This wasn't Cincinnati. But it hasn't happened that way. They added Matuidi, they added Higuain, they added Gonzalez. They're the same damn team they were in July. And it's not particularly fun to watch.
Because they don't create chances. No. You bring Higuain in, and the point is he'll finish the chances. They don't exist. So then he drops off and creates chances, which is not what he's best at. And then you still have some people who can finish at times. But you even watch the last 10 minutes of that TFC game and he hit the crossbar in that incredible moment. He's out wide trying to whip in crosses because no one else is playing. And so you've got Pizarro who covers ground but doesn't want to hit a final pass and scored against Dallas, but that's a rare moment for him. Matuidi scores in this game. Like, you're getting things from players that it's not their skill set. And you can have moments if you're so good. I would say Toronto at the beginning of the Bradley era, guys kind of felt out of position because they had talent but didn't all fit together. But they had 13, 14 players who belonged on the field and could win a game and could be in a game. Miami doesn't have that. And so the roster just makes no sense at this point. And if they get through, it's purely just going to be on the back of Higuain doing something incredible and hitting that ball an inch to the left and it going in.
And they might get through because, remember, the Fire have that ability to create disasters and cost themselves points.
Where do you see the issues with the roster build here? Because I was looking back at like all the little traditional ways an expansion team not necessarily makes a huge splash, but sort of builds a foundation. And like if you look at Nashville, and we'll get to this in a second, like almost all their trades came off and they're starters and they're productive and they at least are doing something that you might expect them to do at a higher level than they had at the past, or at least at an equal level. But like all the trades that Miami made in the league, almost none of them worked out in the way that you would have hoped that they would have worked out. The early signings of young DPs certainly did not work out in the way that they would have hoped that they would have worked out. Really, the only thing that I can see that really hit and was like, yes, I think, and maybe not to 100%, is Rodolfo Pizarro. He is quality.
Yeah.
He is a game changer, I think, in this league. He hasn't shown it all the time, and he's been gone for international duty, and what's around him hasn't always helped him be the player he can be. But I just feel like there are a lot of guys on this team that did not live up to what we thought they might live up to.
You're absolutely correct, and it goes back to the mistaken assumption that Pizarro is a 10. As David just said, he doesn't hit the last pass. You know, he can combine really nice. He's got great feet, combines nicely around the box. He could be dangerous, but if he's the focal point, you're not going to consistently generate chances. And what we saw up the road in Florida with Orlando this year is if you have a super functional midfield, then you don't need to go out and get a world-renowned superstar number nine. If you have a midfield that has balance and the ability to be creative and a couple of wingers who can be creative, then you could throw a 20-year-old in there and teach him to make the right runs and get goals. We've seen that over and over. Like, Jossie Zardes is not Gonzalo Higuain. Jossie Zardes understands how to make the right runs. Ayo Akinola, he's not Gonzalo Higuain. He's just super smart. He understands how to use space and how to use his body and find the right moments to get in the box and take advantage of what that Toronto midfield is building. Miami doesn't have that midfield. They do not have the ability to break teams down with the ball and with possession. So they're not creating anything that doesn't come directly through Higuain at this point.
So I agree with everything you both said. I think there's a level, though, where they had a plan because of their market that they were just going to keep a bunch of stakes in the Flames. And when it hit in the summer and they had their expansion money and they were Miami and the stadium was open and it was fun, they were going to bring in the pieces that were available that they wanted. And then they were going to get momentum and go into the playoffs. I think that was a large part of their build. And so I think when you look at a lot of those MLS trades, those guys were only supposed to play for 8 games. of the season. And then they were all kind of going to be replaced as they brought the rest of the roster in. And I think it's hurt every team, but of any team in MLS, I think what's happened in the world, a global pandemic, has thrown it off for them the most, in that players weren't available. The transfer windows weren't at the same time. It wasn't easy to travel guys. It wasn't the environment to bring players into. And so I think they kind of ended up with, this is what you get. You get Matuidi and you get Higuain because you can convince them to come, and it works. And on your Pizarro point, he's a talented soccer player. He's a starter for the Mexican national team, but they paid a lot for him. And that was kind of a rush thing at the end where, I don't care, it's not my money, do whatever you want with it. But for that level of money, could you actually have gone a step higher? Could you have gotten a European starter? Could you have gotten a guy who was your creative player? So I think they got really hurt by the way the situation ended up. And then they couldn't pivot around or pivot back because there wasn't really player movement in the end. And to the point of the functional midfield, I think there's an idea then maybe going next year that Matuidi and Pizarro are so good at what they do that they'll find ways to make things happen. And you saw them each score a goal in the last week. That's not who they are, but they're so good at soccer that they'll figure it out. I hope they don't go that route. I hope they look at it and say, this was a mulligan. What are the pieces that are available? What can we move? How do we rebuild? 2021 is our expansion year. How do we get it right that year?
And I just want to say, Matuidi hasn't been the player that they thought they were getting.
No.
He has not.
He's not covered the ground. He's not controlled games in that way.
No. What's the 1 minute take on Diego Alonso? Because we haven't really said his name in this the entirety of this discussion. It's focused on the front office and the moves that they made there. It's focused on the players. It's focused on the balance, but he's the one who's setting the balance.
He hasn't settled on a formation or a tactical approach. He hasn't put his best players in a position to succeed, and he hasn't gotten really any of the young players to improve. He has been a disappointment considering his pedigree, what he did in Liga MX. It has not been a good year for Diego Alonso down in Fort Lauderdale.
I could have sworn, Dave, in this conversation that you were going to come out hot, not for Chad Ashton's DC United, but for Thierry Henry's Montreal Impact. Now, the rumor was during the TSN broadcast that they were going to go back to Montreal this week before this final game and basically not be able to train because that's the way it works. Well, now they're going to stay in New Jersey, so they'll be together and preparing for this. We're right now in ninth. Why didn't they get a mention? Are we not excited about them? They're at your DC United.
They haven't been exciting. They haven't been fun to watch. Bojan's had moments over the last 6 weeks that are better than anything else he's done in MLS. That's not enough. They're not entertaining. They don't really push the game in any way. They kind of just hang and survive if they can and then try and create chances. They made a few subs at halftime this week to bring on more attacking pieces. And I don't fault Henry for any of it. The roster's not good. The team's not very good. And they've lost Tider along the way, which they still weren't that good without him. But there's teams in this league. I think Chicago, you mentioned. I would say over the last, especially this weekend, giving up goals. Over the last few weeks, I've said, I think the Red Bulls have gotten fun again. They've played aggressive. They play fairly direct. And Nashville's been successful and had moments and they, control games and they have ideas of what they want to do. You don't feel any of that with Montreal. So they're not a team that you're going to go into the playoffs and say, wow, I can't wait to see what they'll do on the road in the first round. I can't wait to see who they'll surprise. Or at a minimum, I'm going to show up to watch Nacho Piatti because he's special. They don't have any of that.
That's sad because at the beginning of the season, with some of the things that Henry was doing in CCL, you thought maybe this was going to be pretty interesting. And so far, the most interesting thing for them down the stretch is Henry on tape, on audio, basically yelling at his players. And that's the most interesting thing that's happened with Montreal. That's the Eastern Conference. Out West, you have four teams fighting for two spots. It does kind of look like the two spots are set when you're going on points per game. It's the Rapids and San Jose with 1.38 and 1.29 PPG, and then it's Vancouver and LA just below with 1.09 and 1.05. Vancouver had an opportunity this weekend. They lost to Portland. LA Galaxy knocked down a pretty, I was going to say hapless, but that felt harsh given the year that they've had. RSL squad, just, it was a good performance for the Dom Kinnear Galaxy, and Christian Pavone is a monster. But
is this it? Is this our last game of Christian Pavone?
Probably seems like it. I mean, I don't understand how you could justify the $20 million.
Because when you get that ball, when you clear that ball out and he's on the run, oh man, it is awesome to watch.
I know, but it's, it's like buying an engine, but you don't have the rest of the car. it's just going to sit on blocks for most of the year, and you're going to be hoping. Like, I just don't see the project that they have to go spend $20 million on the guy, or why he would say, I want to be part of that project, when it's just him seemingly like running into a wall every single week. Who are the teams you want to see in? Is it as simple as Rapids and Earthquakes? Stay above the line. You're the more entertaining, the more ambitious of the two. Or is there any case to be made for Galaxy or Whitecaps?
The only case to be made for the Galaxy is Pavon. Because he is that good, and he has been that fun, even as the team has kind of mostly fallen apart around him. And it'll be interesting to see what happens. Because if Boca's asking $20 million for him, they're not going to get that. This is a man who started for Argentina in the World Cup at age 22. And they did not get $20 million for him. They're not going to get him. They're not going to sell him for $20 million just before he turns 25. When he's fallen out of the Argentina national team picture. So his value has actually gone down a bit in the past couple of years, even as his play for the Galaxy has been fantastic. And I do hope they figure out a way to get him back, because he's a best 11 caliber winger in this league. But that's the only...
How much would you pay if you're the Galaxy?
How much would I pay of my money? Or
no, this is the Galaxy's money. You don't have to spend a dime. You just get to sit on this podcast and just pontificate about spending somebody else's money.
What did Toronto pay for Pozuelo? About 12?
Yeah, I think.
Yeah.
Started at 9, raised to 12?
Yeah, something like that. But part of it with Pavon, like, he's really, really good. And he is 25. And you have to sit down with him and say, okay, are we buying this to flip you to a European team in 2 years? Or do you want to be here for 8 years and be the face of the Galaxy? And my hope would be that he says, you know, in this hypothetical conversation that we've just constructed out of thin air,
You have to have faith, Doyle.
Yeah. I want to be the face of the Galaxy. And if that's the case, then you make the deal, because then you know, barring injury, for like the next 7-8 years, you have an Ignacio Piatti level player on your team. And that gives you a focal point in the attack and a chance to build around that. And I mean, that, like, this is not a team that's done well signing DPs over the past few years. So you know you at least have one good one.
I love
Jonah that guy?
Can I just rewind this real quick? Is he Ignacio Piatti in this league?
Not like, quite.
No offense.
Not quite at that level.
Yeah.
But not far off.
He's in that realm. He's not as effective yet, but he's also younger. I mean, Piatti was at his peak when he came here. So you could hope he could even improve, not as a player, but in his role, right?
And also remember that last year, Pavon and Zlatan, when they played together, Pavon, in terms of like chances created per 90, it was a small sample. It's only like 900 minutes, but he was putting up one of the best seasons we've ever seen in this league, just because he's like, okay, I'm going to beat my man and I'm going to slide it to Zlatan and 30 goals.
But isn't that there's no future that looks like that.
Well, maybe we should talk about it. Who's going to be coach of the LA Galaxy? Because that's a major factor in all of this.
Yeah, so Guillermo Barrichello, we talked about it on Thursday as if it was going to happen. It was going to happen. It did happen on Thursday evening, the LA Galaxy parting ways with Guillermo. It had to happen. There's no other scenario here that worked. And I thought Dennis DeClosa in the like hours and days leading up to it had basically said, this is what's going to happen. I'm just not going to say it publicly just yet. I think they handled it right. They were respectful. Guillermo off to whatever the next opportunity that he will have is. It just did not work. This didn't work in LA. There was a bandage named Zlatan for a season. But once that bandage got ripped away, a lot of things were exposed, and now we see them being what they are, which is the worst team in the Western Conference, at least on record. You had an interesting suggestion, Dave. I like the suggestion.
Thank you.
A realistic suggestion.
Yeah.
But that's where I live. So make the pitch, and then let's also just kind of have a bat around here what it should be for the Galaxy, because it has not been a good 5 years or whatever it is.
Yeah. So my pitch is Gonzalo Pineda. He's been an assistant at Seattle for the last 4 years. He played in Seattle's Shield winning, double winning team, I think, in 2014. He's a Chivas legend. He's a Liga MX legend, played in the World Cup for Mexico. He has all the credentials to get the respect of a guy like Chicharito and Jonah Dos Santos. He has done a lot of the tactical work behind the scenes for Brian Schmetzer to keep Seattle relevant and dangerous at the top as pieces have moved in and out with Dempsey and Chad Marshall and everything. He gets a ton of the credit. And as a player in this league, he was at his last legs. But the way he sees the game, the way he controlled the midfield shows you who he is as a person. He's bilingual. He obviously speaks Spanish. I think he'll connect with the market. I think fans in that market know who he is. They'll respect him. They'll want to see how his team plays. On top of all his credentials as a first team manager, I know he cares about developing young players. I've seen him on the field after training right before MLS Cup, working with Danny Leyva to help his game, to improve him. And you have a guy who's a Mexican legend, and coming into a market like LA, the ability to connect with young players there, to have them believe that they could get to the next level when you look at what that academy can produce and what that area is. I think he's the right guy for soccer reasons. I think he's the right guy off the field. And when I look at the LA Galaxy, what you've seen over the last few years with GBS, my worry is the other big name you've heard, which is Piojo, Miguel Herrera coming from Mexico. He is very much, I have the best players on the field. I will put them out on the field and they will win. And that's what GBS did. He has more emotion. I think he has more energy to it. But my worry is if he's the guy brought in, it's going to be the same LA Galaxy that we've seen the last 3 or 4 years.
How is that different than Brian Schmetzer, though? Brian Schmetzer's won 2 of the last 4 MLS Cups.
Because look at how they beat LAFC. They changed what they did. And I think a lot of that goes down to the work Gonzalo Pineda did for those games. And it wasn't his job. He wasn't the head coach. We've seen already every guy who goes from assistant to head coach has different ideas. They have different things that they want to do. So, listen, Brian Schmetzer's won and it's great, but the LA Galaxy roster's nowhere near where Seattle
was. That was the point I was going to make.
They had Chad Marshall and they had Ozzy Alonso and Stefan Fry and all those pieces, and then they continue to add on top and they spend pretty high in MLS. But the Galaxy aren't there, and I don't think they should go there. I don't think the plan should be Piojo comes in, and you know the one thing is he'll say, I need you to spend on the roster, and that will push them to. Right? Pavone's going to get done if Piojo is getting hired and says, I need the best talent. This is who I want. Because you don't hire him if you're not going to do that. But that's not the future of MLS. That's not the best teams we see anymore is, oh, it's the most talent and then it just figures itself out. We see teams that are set up in a specific way to play a specific style and then the talent gets brought in. And I think if the Galaxy go with a guy like Herrera, they're going to be going back to what worked for them in 2013 and before that.
And maybe it's not even...
What about Jurgen Klinsmann? I mean, the crosstown rivalry between Jurgen and
Bob for this show's purposes,
yeah,
you sure. better believe. I'm going straight to my Galaxy shrine and throwing this Giovanni Dos Santos Tops card right on top of it and like burning it like in a ceremony to try to get Jurgen Klinsmann to coach the Galaxy, but it's not happening. The thing I would say about the Galaxy, and to go to the Sounders comparison, is like the Sounders, it may not always be about quote unquote style of play, but like their build is coherent in the sense that they use every single mechanism that they have at their disposal in MLS to bring in the talent that then Brian Schmetzer can put into a team that is successful, and also talent that can solve a lot of problems on the field on their own.
Also,
you know what I mean? Where the Galaxy don't have that. And that's not to say Dennis Akosa cannot do that, but he's talked a lot about doing that. And he's talked a lot about getting more from the academy, which they've started to do. But they
which
do
is not what Seattle does.
They do not have a coherent roster. Like their roster, there's no coherency there. There's no like we are, you know, exploiting the edges of these different mechanisms. We are taking advantage of our TAM signings. We are signing the right DPs. We have the depth players that are doing it. We have a back line that's functional. Like none of that is there. So there's a lot to solve.
So, here's the thing, though. In a vacuum, I don't hate a lot of the signings that they made. Like, Insua hasn't been great, but he wasn't, like, that was a signing I think most MLS teams would make. Getting, you know, Sasha Kljestan off the scrap heap, digging up Joe Corona, who's actually been pretty good.
Sure.
Like, these are all...
But the problems existed before those moves, right?
For sure. So I think this roster has been mismanaged badly over the last 5 years, and they're still trying to dig out from underneath that. They got to get digging quick, though, because I think, you know, after the manager goes, we all know who's next on the chopping block.
So I thought that Zlatan was, here's this Band-Aid, and behind the scenes, we can basically rebuild while still being competitive.
Yeah.
But what they ended up doing was more short-term fixes. So you talk about digging. They never went back and fixed the original issues. right? Harry Kitchen's still on the roster. How much did they give him?
Giancarlo Gonzalez, no matter what he did this
Gonzalez
weekend.
Is still the same mess.
Terrible signing.
Yeah. And all of that, I think, was to try and stay competitive.
Right.
Rather than say, how do we tear this whole thing down and fix it? And maybe the Galaxy will never do that. Maybe that's something that they cannot sell to their fans or to ownership. Listen, I live in a city where my teams always suck and they always tell us they can't rebuild, but they continue to suck. And we'd rather they rebuild than just continue to suck. But the owners keep telling us that they're not allowed to because they're in New York. I don't know if it's the same situation, but that could be what's happening. And that's going to always hold you back.
All right. J-E-T-S.
Mets.
I think I think Kansas City beat them this weekend. I don't know. I don't follow the NFL. I just see the scrolling scores as I watch.
Also, don't follow the NFL. But during the crew game, it said Pat Mahomes had more touchdowns in the game than the Jets have had all season. Ooh. That's the most NFL I got this week.
That's tough. Let's talk Rapids. They're going to get in, I believe. This points per game change was really helpful to them, of course, because they weren't able to play soccer for the better part of a month. They're still not officially in. That's the Salty Sounders producer in my notes here. Who's still upset about a 3-1 loss.
It's amazing how afraid of the Rapids Andres is. Like, he just
terrified.
Is outclassed.
Terrified. What do we think about the Rapids' chances in the playoffs? First of all, to get there, which I think that they will do. But second of all, to actually do something. Like, what is this team? They are, in my mind, clearly better than the teams below the playoff line in the West. They just haven't had the chance to play the games because, look at that, we live in a pandemic.
Yeah, I mean, it's been the bizarre, you know, this is the most bizarre team during the most bizarre season. And part of that is what got our attention last year with Colorado was how dominant they were on set pieces. And Kai Kamara was such a huge part of that. And they traded Kai, and they're still really dominant on set pieces, as we saw against the Sounders. And they've gotten great progress from Sam Vines and obviously Cole Bassett. Lalas Abubakar has not been as locked down as he was last year, but he's still been really good. And then Austin Trusty is suddenly coming on as well. You know, they it hasn't been linear and it hasn't been smooth with Colorado by any stretch, but they have repeatedly found a way to get it done while playing actual good soccer throughout. And you saw it against that Seattle team, which we all agree is one of the best teams in the league. Colorado was out there knocking the ball around, getting their fullbacks forward, little intricate stuff because they start Rubio as a center forward and he likes to drop off, and then Bassett will come bursting out of central midfield, and suddenly your number 8 is where the number 9 is, and your number 10 is on the wing, and one of the wingers is like, this is good fun stuff. So they've won by playing mostly really good soccer, and Robin Fraser has done a good job of for the most part bringing the young guys along and helping them level up while they're doing it. This is a team I'm not picking them to win any games in the playoffs, but I wouldn't be at all shocked if they did.
Yeah, I'm a big Sam Vines stan. I'm just gonna throw that out there. Mm-hmm. People got on me because I left Cole Bassett out of my level up 11, but I just think what Sam Vines has done this year has really gone under the radar. He serves a really, really good ball, and
he didn't last year.
Yeah, well, that's when you go level up. That's what I'm saying. You add skills, but his ability, you talk about with Anton Tinnerholm, to play both sides of the ball, I think is really, really underrated. We'll talk about him more in just a little bit. Let's talk about NYCFC before we get to the Continental Awards.
Wait, we got to answer the original question. We all agree we want to see Colorado and San Jose
of course,
right?
Entertainment purposes.
We got it real quick on the Quakes. They were 0-5-3 with a negative 21 goal differential in their first 8 games after the MLS's back tournament, and in the next 8 games they're something like 5-1-2 plus 7.
I told you. It's like it's a club that's masquerading as a roller coaster, man. It's like being in a whitewater rapids. One second you're like in nice, cool, like calm water, drinking beers out of the cooler, and the next you're dragging, you know, Chris Wondolowski back into the boat, and he's coughing out water. Like it's a crazy ride. It's
a hell of a metaphor.
I don't know. Matias Almeida is like, I don't even know if I want to be a part of this season. We should just end the season. And this is while they're just whooping teams. It makes no sense whatsoever.
But it
those
also,
two teams in.
It also speaks to, you know, we just crushed the Galaxy for their roster construction, and to a degree, we did the same to Inter Miami. Well, this San Jose team, their roster is not much different than it was 2 years ago. I mean, they've added guys like Espinoza and Fierro and Judson, but it hasn't been a complete teardown and rebuild. Almeida, I still think he's a madman for the man marking, but he's getting such buy-in and they play with such clarity that it works. And I think they deserve all the praise in the world for that, because I don't think anyone here thinks that on talent, they're a top 20 team in MLS. But it's not all about talent out there. It is about fit and it's about commitment and it's about the ability to execute the game plan, which on both sides of the ball is wild and entertaining as hell. So, yeah, I'm glad that the Quakes are likely going to be back in the playoffs.
There's something about Almeida. You know, you got Tommy Thompson looking into cameras, giving stump speeches. You have Chris Wondolowski wearing purple shirts because that's like Almeida's good luck thing. Like, there's just this level of belief that defies reason at times. And for this team, for this club, in this crazy moment, it's clearly, I don't know if working is the right way to describe it. They're going to sneak into the playoffs, but like it's good enough. So, you know, whatever. NYCFC, before we get to the Continental Awards. They, you know, you talk about the Rebels being fun. They kind of worked them over without Aber, without Matrizo, without Tajiri Shradi. Here's Tati Castellanos. Here's Maxi Morales back. Here's Alex Ring doing number 8 Alex Ring things as opposed to being played all over the field. I mean, if that midfield duel, as you wrote, is Parks, Ring, and Maxi, and they're on form and healthy, mm-hmm. that's tough to deal with.
All three of the guys can pass the ball. All three of the guys move. All three of the guys work defensively. You know, Father Time is catching up to Maxi a little bit. They have to manage his minutes. They have to be smart about that. But if he's playing like he did against the Red Bulls, they can beat anybody in the league. They are a problem. And it goes back to what I was saying about, like, if you just build the central midfield right, you don't need a world beater of a striker. You just need somebody to make the right runs and to finish off the plays that the, you know, the talent creates around him. And that's what Castellanos did this weekend and got himself a hat trick. It's a massive if, especially in this season, which is filled with soft tissue injuries because of the compressed schedule. If these guys stay healthy and you have Tinnerholm on one side and Moderita on the other and a very solid central defense, NYCFC is a problem. NYCFC is a legit problem for every, not just in the East, but everybody.
And when you talk about roster build, missing James Sands and Eber and Tajiri Shradi, and to still have Tati Castellanos who can get a hat trick, and Keaton Parks, who's already the starter in central midfield. So then you've got Sands can play center back. Like, this is one of the deepest rosters in MLS, and this is where you get to see it come out. The only thing is Maxi's the piece that they couldn't replace, and that's what they were missing when he was out. He's the one that they can't cover for, and I don't think Toronto can cover for Pozuelo, and I don't think Seattle can cover Lodeiro. It's not a knock on them, but to Doyle's point, they need to manage him because he needs to be fit and ready and playing at a high level for them to push these teams.
All right, let's talk about the Continental Awards. Of course, we do these every year now. It's become a tradition. We fill the holes that the traditional award structure leaves open.
Tradition.
Huh?
Sorry. Doyle did a little Les Mis on Twitter today, so I had to bring it up.
Oh, yeah. We need Sue's here for that. That's going to go right over my head. I have no idea what you're talking about. We'll be asking for nominations for the Continental Awards this week on the Extra Time handle on Twitter to be considered. A player, a coach, a front office person, whatever it is, has to be nominated. So fill up those ads. Make sure we don't miss anybody. Make sure the person that you think could get snubbed, that their name is in there. We will name the finalists, and then we'll have a vote on those. The way that'll work, there are 5 of us, including Charlie and Kalen. I don't know if Kalen's, if he's on the show, if he's coming back. I don't know how that's going to work.
I heard Kalen's actually selling his votes out on the internet.
Could be smart. True. Business that is smart. Like that is true. Yeah, that's all about the margins. All about the margins. We will have 5 votes, and then the 6th vote will be the fan vote. If it is 3-3, whichever person, player, front office, whatever it is, club, if there's any of those, they will be named the official winner. So here are the award categories. I'm not going to do the drum roll, though I wanted to. Fullback. We do not have a name for the fullback / outside back award. This is a required award. You have about 3 that made the best 11 over the last 10 years. You have none ever that won the Defender of the Year award. It just doesn't happen. So we need a name for the fullback award. Do you guys have any that are just jumping around?
My vote is the Jose Barciaga Jr. award.
Dig it.
Facts.
So this fullback's not going to defend.
I didn't ask him to.
Tony Sané. even though Tony Sané actually started as a forward, ended up playing right midfield. When he went to Germany, played for Hertha Berlin, he was mostly a defensive midfielder. We all remember him best as an overlapping right back. He was arguably the first truly modern fullback in MLS, the first fullback who could go out there and just be the best player on the field and win you a game. So the Tony Sané Fullback of the Year award is my vote.
I like that one. If you have a suggestion,
I second that. I'll give Doyle this one, but remember later when I need your vote for something.
Okay. All right. Well, a little quid pro quo is what you're saying, huh? Yeah. Scratch my back, I'll scratch yours.
Yeah.
How about the defensive midfielder? It's got to be the Chris Armas Award, yeah? I mean, we've kind of gone back and forth. We've said it was Ozzie.
We would say maybe Shaulie Joseph. Right?
Yeah, but I think if you really go back and look, four straight years.
Ooh, can we create 11. A new Continental Award? Can I do one right now, or does have to send it in? The Shaulie Joseph Most Versatile Player of the Year Award? That should be one.
We need to debate this.
Okay.
Shaulie was really good, but was he that versatile? He was like an apex number eight.
Yeah, but sometimes he also played center back and played higher in the midfield and played center forward. Not at his best, but he did do it. Right?
Yeah,
Ozzie Alonso has never played center back or central center forward.
That's fine.
So I'm just saying.
If I'm a gavel, it is the Chris Armas Defensive Midfielder of the Year in Major League Soccer. So
I agree with that. We'd be 100%.
We'll get your nominations for that one as well.
I can't believe Anders just brought up Brad Evans.
Get
in the
out
same
of here. Get out of here, producer Anders. We got to shut that private chat down ASAP. If the David Akam Bad Prediction of the Year. No comment here other than the fact that I've tasked Anders with going through all of our predictions to find the most embarrassing. So prepare yourself for that moment. I've told him not to tell us any of these, to not give us any hints at all. Just pure embarrassment in the moment. So
based off last week, I'm feeling pretty good because you ran a clip where I said Nashville would be better than Miami this year in February. Nailed it.
But that was him just trolling me.
Yeah.
So now he's going to be trolling you. So it's going to be the other way around. Just prepare yourself for that.
Well, he should rerun that clip again, just in case.
Not that entertaining. Front office GM.
Yeah.
I said, Mike Jacobs has a case, but a lot of folks have cases for this one. The case for Mike Jacobs are the trades and the build of an expansion team that basically nobody gave a shot to be really good. I know, Doyle, you said they'd make the playoffs. I think you did too, Dave. So maybe there were more than a couple that gave the shot. But it's incredible that they've done this and missed on their DPs.
Yeah.
So there are pros and cons to this case.
Like it's mind-blowing that Nashville have made the playoffs despite being basically 0-3 on DPs. It speaks to how good Zimmerman, McCarty, Romney, Godoy, and then Joe Willis in goal as well. That spine right up the middle they deserve a lot of credit for that, but it is absolutely wild that they don't have a single DP who you're like, yeah, he's in the top 50% of the league at his position.
The other one that goes in that conversation, by the way, is Toronto. You said it more strongly worded than I did in the pregame meeting that two of their DPs they missed on. Three, if you want to count Bradley and whatever he counts as. I don't think they missed as bad on Piatti as I thought they were going to, which is saying something weird. But they've had so many injuries, and their roster depth, I think, is even better than NYCFC's now. It has to be the deepest roster in the league. And Ollie Curtis has done that, taking over the team and remained competitive. So it's pretty impressive what they've been able to do.
Pozuelo counts as one DP or three DPs.
They're three for six, right?
Yeah, exactly. Weeby, you're still muted, dude.
I would throw out Orlando City
professional,
here.
Professional podcaster, folks.
Hey, man, I had to cough. I didn't want to hit that cough button, and I forgot to unmute it.
I respect that you didn't blame Wyatt. I thought you were going to blame your kid for crying.
No, Wyatt's at daycare. First day of daycare for Wyatt. It's been a stressful day for all of us. We're just trying to muddle through. Luis Muzzi in Orlando in conjunction with Oscar Pereja. I think that's another one there.
For sure.
While we're on this, who's the Siggy Schmidt Coach of the Year? Who are the candidates? Oscar's got to be one. Jim Curtin's got to be one.
Yep.
Does it come to just
fans will hate us if we don't say Gary Smith, but I don't know that he's for sure a finalist.
Does it just come down to supporter shield? If Curtin wins, it's them. If Vanny wins, it's them.
No, because what Oscar did in Orlando, I don't think anybody thought it was going to come this quickly, right? And then the other thing is Adrian Heath. We all said at the start of the year, if they lose Ike Opara, they're in big, big trouble. We saw what happened to Sporting Kansas City last year when they lost Ike Opara. Well, Minnesota lost Ike Opara, and then they lost a bunch of other guys as well. Ozzie's been hurt for a good chunk of the year. Minnesota's in the playoffs. Minnesota might even get a home game again. So
they also went out and dropped a bag on Bebo Reynoso. That always helps.
He hasn't been that good.
No, yeah. He hasn't, but it's helped.
Helped has been getting Kevin Molino and Ethan Finley healthy.
So. Big hot boy guy. Big hot boy guy. All right, let us know on that one. We will check
back. Kevin Molino and your most improved whatever, or your comeback whatever?
No, because I always knew his level was this high.
Yeah, I think it's more of a comeback player of the year.
Yeah, he's more of a comeback call on that one. We also have the Super Draft Player of the Year, Daryl DK, with another goal. That's goals in 3 straight games, 6 overall. Making it look easy is the young man. Nice little run from deep out of central midfield. Then Mauricio Pereira is a freaking...
He's a wizard.
He's a quarterback back there. He's just like, he's Patrick Mahomes. You're like, I didn't know you were left-footed, and he's not. But he put it on the money.
So Charlie came on this show on Thursday and was fairly upset about the Rookie of the Year being changed. Charlie does a fair amount of work with the New England Revolution and watches Henry Kessler pretty regularly. Should have seen that warning shot come up because, man, Revs fans are pissed. Revs fans are pissed right now, and I did not see it coming. And it was a lot of the weekend on social media of just Revs fans being like, how do you spell Henry Kessler for Defensive Player of the Year? He has to win it now. He should be Rookie of the Year. And it was like, oh, whoa, didn't realize this was going
to
happen.
Do you think Henry Kessler has a chance to win? Well, I guess we're the ones doing Super Bowl. I was talking about the normal voter pool. And I was like, the normal MLS award voter pool is 100,000% giving this to Daryl DK. Like, it's not even a question. Mm-hmm. Goals just seduce. That's just the way these award things work. And if you're not watching Henry Kessler week to week, you're not going to vote for him. How close is it in your mind, Doyle, DK and Kessler for this Super Draft Player of the Year that we got going?
I think it's basically a coin flip. Because both of those guys have been essential for good teams that are in the, you know, in the playoff picture. With New England, it's been their ability to pitch zeros or ones all year, and Kessler has been a huge part of that. But he's a very good passer. He initiates a lot of their movements going forward, and he's basically played every minute. That's huge, and it's whether he wins this award or not. Just a massive home run of a draft pick for the Revs. And DK, I mean, it might be even more so because he's averaging a goal or an assist every 100 minutes. That's elite production from a 20-year-old center forward who was picked fifth in the draft.
Was production. That was the big question.
It absolutely was. And, you know, I remember doing the draft show, and it was between him and Robinson. And the Miami went with Robinson because Robinson was unquestionably a more productive striker in college. And I still think that Robbie Robinson could be a good MLS player despite having an awful year. But with DK, what has separated him from not just Robinson, but from past forwards who have come into the league is that he has done it. Obviously goals like we saw this weekend where when Pereira is out there and they have something close to their first team central midfield and using that space, but he's also done it without that. He's also given them an outlet over the top. He has also given them the type of hold up play that allows Chris Mueller to have kind of the, explosive, unprecedented for him type of season that he has had. So I think I just talked myself into DK, right? Because Kessler's been really good. DK has been a level above that for a team that I think once they get healthy, we all consider to be not necessarily one of the apex favorites, but certainly a top tier contender for MLS Cup.
I don't think it's unfair recency bias that Kessler had it. And DK has built as it's gone along. And to your point, the last few weeks, there's been games where Nani and Mueller haven't played. There's been games where one of them hasn't played. There's been games where Pereira hasn't played. And DK's performed through all of that. Yeah. And so they continue to push going forward, that's his argument now is he's not an after-ran with a bunch of guys who are good where he can put in a chance or two. He is being a major part of a team that's pushing into the top half of the playoffs.
I think you got to give credit to Oscar Pereira on the way that he managed him and his minutes and his exposure this year. He did not make a start until August 22nd, did Daryl DK.
Yeah.
I mean, they waited. They didn't even play him in MLS's back, really. He wasn't a sub during the knockout round, but that's it. They did not throw him out to the world.
Remember, Dom Dwyer went out at that point, too.
Yeah.
So Tesha went from the backup slash starter to Dom's out, and now it was just him and Tesha.
He's done an incredible job. We have Teenager of the Year to fill more holes. What's our cutoff? You always have to have a cutoff date. They have to be a teenager, certainly at some point in 2020. Does it need to be all of 2020?
They have to have been a teenager at one point in their life. For me, then it's fair.
Everybody, yeah, the bingo. I'm eligible for the Teenager of the Year. I feel younger.
Andrew Wiebe, the teenager.
Yeah, I'm not feeling that young, but I guess I could get myself together.
My initial take was, if at any point during this season you played an MLS game as a teenager, you should be eligible for this award. So if the season started on March 1st and you turned 20 on March 3rd and you played on March 1st, you should be eligible, because to be able to accomplish that and then be a good player and be productive and win this award, I think alone is impressive enough for me.
I understand your logic. What I would say to that, because I know how these things play out, is then inevitably you're going to have Brennan Aaronson win the award, win the AT&T Young Player of the Year, the newly christened, will be him versus Diego Rossi.
Christened.
Yeah, I saw your face and I knew. There's a Wiebe moment for you. Everybody just mark a spot on the bingo board. I think you have to be to just kind of like make sure that we're filling a hole as opposed to copying part of what is already an existing award. Doyle, I think your pre-show suggestion is what we should go with.
Yeah, it's not just because of Brendan Aaronson, who has been a teenager for the vast majority of this year. I think he turned
20
10 days ago.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's 20. He's no longer the Teenager of the Year.
Yeah, but he was 19.
The entire season. This is my point. This is
the Arsenal discussion. Yeah. No, he's a 20-year-old. No. You can't give the Teenager of the Year to a 20-year-old. I think there are two ways to do it. Either you say, okay, what's the cutoff day? The cutoff day is the last day of the regular season, which is how we usually do it with 22 under 22. Or the cutoff day is anyone born January 1st, 2001 or later. Someone who literally does not turn 20 until next year. And my vote is for that last one. It just completely takes the ambiguity out of it. It makes it very easy to understand. This is someone who does not turn 20 until the year 2021.
My vote is the cutoff date's Heineken rivalry, but that's just me.
All right. I have seconded Doyle's motion carried. It is now,
you owe me two votes
throughout 2020.
It's all third up here.
How about the American Player of the Year and the Canadian Player of the Year? Always love to do these. So we'll honor those as well. We'll have the most.
Oh, by the way, our producer Chris mentions that Brendan Aaronson would have turned 20 after the normal MLS season had ended if it had been a normal year.
That's irrelevant.
That blood's
on your head. Talk to me about normal years. Don't bring up normal years.
That's your conscience, Wiebe.
I can't fathom a normal year.
You live with that.
It's clean. It's spotless.
When we get to the pearly gates, this is something you're going to have to answer for.
I won't see you there, probably. I don't think either of us are going to be in that position.
You don't ever go to the Brooklyn Museum?
You never know.
I thought we'd meet up at the Brooklyn Museum at one point.
Well, different times. Wear your mask. Most MLSE transaction of the year. So send those to us. Maybe it's Tam for Gam. Maybe it's a signing who was signed and then never played. I don't know. There are a lot to choose from in that award category. You've got the personality of the year. We'll ask for some contributions there. We have the Super Sub Award for El Seno. I believe that's who we'll name it after. It feels
Can
right.
he win it? If it's named after him while he's still in the league?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Okay. I don't know the rules.
This hasn't been a great El Seno year, I don't feel like. It hasn't been a vintage year for El Seno.
No, but he's been good. Just hasn't been what he was last year.
Right. They haven't needed him to be. Yeah. Most improved player of the year is there as well. I did my level up 11, which was fun. These are all candidates.
Are you going to apologize to Eric Williamson?
I've done so publicly, but I will do so yet again. I am sorry, Eric Williamson. You absolutely should have been in this team. Had I had the opportunity or the foresight to remember that, I don't know how I didn't. I would have replaced Frankie Amaya probably with Eric Williamson, which would have made my midfield.
You would have kept Busio.
I would have kept Busio.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's the right call.
Yeah, well, I would have kept Busio.
Because he's improved more or because he's better?
I think because he's improved more, and also he's played a bigger role for a better team. And I think that's part of improving, is that taking on that additional responsibility, which is not to say that Frankie Amaya can make FC Cincinnati anything, but, you know, the train wreck that they
Frankie
are.
Amaya, Frankie Amaya would win MLS MVP if he improved.
That's fair. That's fair. I have Chris Mueller. I have Ayo Akinola up top. And then the guy who sent it in had Jordan Morris in the team. So we keep Jordan Morris. Though I think second half of 2019 was when the true level up was. Agreed. I think this level is basically around the where he was last year into the playoffs in particular. And then my back line is George Bello, Dave Romney, Mark McKenzie, Richie Larea. Although right back is crazy deep in that sense. You have like Julian Araujo. You have who else
say
in that?
It. Say it.
Brian Reynolds.
There you go.
I just pretended like I didn't know. I was like,
can you level up brain. If you'd never played before?
Let me rack my brain. Yeah, well, he's in USL.
So, then I have by the way, Claire
as my goalkeeper.
One of the reasons that's great that I love when some of these big players come into MLS is the moment when like Gonzalo Higuain and Richie Larea get in each other's face, or it was Matuidi and Richie Larea doesn't step down. And you're like, yes, he's going to win a Champions League. Let's go, Richie.
All right, we're into the mailbag, 401-206-0-MLS, extra time at MLSsoccer.com. Because of these Topps cards, thank you to Jillian at Topps for sending these to me. I've been burning a hole in my pocket. We got to open a pack and just see what we got. Which one? Which one? Left, right, or center?
Center.
Center. Center. I just moved it around. I'll take the center one. Open this thing up. I don't know about you guys, but when I was growing up, getting a new pack of cards, like begging my dad for it at the checkout at the grocery store or whatever, was just incredible. We have a World Cup winner for the Chicago Fire right here. Straight out of the boat, Bastian Schweinsteiger. Ooh. What a pull that is. Big good pull. Stuff.
Big
pull. Maxim Cheneau. Oh, God, I'm just rolling in Giovanni Dos Santos cards.
Wow.
This one goes straight to the shrine. Ronald Matarrita. And here we go. A shout-out from earlier in the show. Nacho Piatti.
Whoa, Weeby. Hitting bangers only right now.
And I'm going to send this one straight to you, Dave, so that Megan can put it up somewhere in the apartment. What do you think it is?
Is it Benny Failhaber?
It's Evan Bush.
Oh, God. There's a lot of options on that one.
A beautiful man is Evan Bush. This might be another
Although he grew hair now, so I don't know if she's into it.
Really? This, Kyle Beckerman has a lot of hair in this, so now I have the dread card. We could go there. And this is not a flattering picture. I apologize to Justin Miram right now. If you're watching on YouTube,
doesn't look good in that color.
Yeah, no, not in the Orlando City color. That was a good pack open. I enjoyed that. Let's get to the mail. What do we got?
So for everyone listening on a podcast, by the way, Andrew Weeby just opened a pack of cards and showed us all of them and named the people in it. So in case you felt like you missed that experience,
producer
you can go
Chris
to YouTube.
Said that was going to be a train wreck. And he might not have been wrong about that.
Yeah, that's very fair. Let's start out with the 25 greatest players in MLS history presented by AT&T. JD sends an email in, and this got announced last week. The eligible players came out, and there'll be a ton of ballots going out, and people will vote, and it'll be announced. JD says, I'm just going to put it out there that there's no way that Zlatan, Vela, and Kaká, and others like them deserve to be on the 25 greatest ballot for MLS. While their contributions are undeniable, that's a hell of a recency bias with a great lack of actual trophies for their teams. I don't need to go into the snubs, but as a Sounders fan, you know that Ladero deserves to be on this list more than any of those I mentioned above. And he's not even on the list for voting. Either way, I hope you guys give a good amount of credit to your Mount Rushmore list in casting your votes. And there you go. In other news, he says, always an entertaining show.
So Ladero isn't on it, huh? Like, I don't think he would be in your 25, but I do think he definitely deserves it more than like a Vela or a Zlatan do.
I haven't looked at any of this stuff.
He has
and you're
to
a
be.
Voter. The and you're fact, a voter, Doyle.
The fact, well, I've been preoccupied with a different vote.
He Ladero is not on the list.
That's insane.
Yeah, I didn't even realize that either.
That's
wow. And they didn't make corrections here because Diego Chara was not on the list, and there were a couple others. Oh, the Stephen only Fry was on the list, and they pushed them in late.
Yeah, the only Ladero, field players for Seattle are Chad Marshall, Ozzie Alonso, and then Clint and Chalry, but they're not for their Sounders. Well, Clint, I guess, would.
Yeah, that's tough, man. That's tough on Ladero. Because he's, he is
Anders the difference is trying to be out here and act like he's such a good Sounders fan that he doesn't want Ladero to be on it. But Nico Ladero, let's say this year ends the way we think. He will have started in 4 of 6 MLS Cup finals.
He is the difference between the U.S. Open Cup era for the Sounders and the MLS Cup era.
That's
a surprising one to me.
What do we think about Vela, Kaká, and Zlatan?
No, they're not on there.
Kaká shouldn't be within 1,000 miles of that list.
No.
What about Vela?
No. You can make a case, but I don't think that you can put him in top 50. Maybe he's in there because of the brilliance of that season. But that's really, it's that season. It's a pretty good expansion season.
So he has to me, the greatest season.
There's not enough of a body of work, because this list is supposed to be about only MLS accomplishments. Anders says Gio Dos Santos is on the list too.
Andrew, wait. What? He had the greatest year in MLS history. If you're basing it purely off one, and he didn't leave yet, so you don't know it's going to get worse. He had the single greatest season.
You can't
give
him credit for the future yet. You can't credit him for the
future. But you can't take away either, is my point.
I agree.
Right? It's not like he left after 2 years. The greatest season in MLS history.
Wait a minute. Saying it's 1 year kind of does undersell what Vela did in 2018. Because Vela had like an apex Nacho Piatti season in 2018. Now, that said, I'm still thinking about Dusty. Because when I think about stuff like this, you need a sample size. And in my head, it's like 4 years is a good enough sample size. 4 years is like, okay, you did, you know, it wasn't just like you showed up, you were this amazing thing that happened, and then you were gone. I do think that Vela probably needs 2 more years, unless he, you know, turns it on in the playoffs and leads them to an MLS Cup. Then you're like, okay, he had a spectacular, you know, playoff run in 2020. But it's tough, and that's what makes lists like this tough. But I'm still shook by no Ladero being among the choices. That's insanity to me.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. Before we get out of here, look, we'll figure out how we're voting. We have time to do that. My personal opinion is the more that you gave in the league, the more credit you should get. Like, it's not about the 25 best players ever played MLS. It's about the 25 greatest MLS players. So there has to be, as you said, Doyle, that extended body of work. That's just my opinion.
Ladero had 2 goals and 5 assists in 390 minutes last year in the playoffs while being the best player on an MLS Cup winner.
Yeah, he should be there. Give us some more mail. What's the one other thing you want to get us for this mailbag, Dave?
This is the first time in MLS history that Sounders fans are right to be indignant. Okay, go ahead, David.
Okay. We got a lot of pushback on some SKC comments that were made. This is one from Gabriel Fry that we had last week, which we didn't get to. He said, SKC fans were surprised in the last game against Colorado when Fontas earned the call-up instead of Beasler, but I looked at the stats, and in the last 5 games, Beasler started, and SKC's record was 1 win, 4 losses, and bled 12 goals. In the last 6 games without Beasler, they are 4-1-1 and given up 6 goals. Does that sound bad? As it seems also... The only games this season Puncic didn't play in, SKC let in a season-high 5 goals against Houston. So he is the best center back that Sporting has. How do you rank Sporting KC's center backs?
Puncic is definitely number one on that list right now, for sure. But then the problem with Sporting Kansas City, and though I still think they are one of the top 2 or 3 teams in the West, is that the rest of that ranking is like shuffle a deck of cards, throw it in the air, and pick up the first one you find. Like, they've tried Winston Reed. They've tried what Graham Smith has gotten some games. They've tried Beasley. That hasn't worked that well this year. Fontas has been inconsistent from the jump for them. So then it's just about Peter Vermees trying to find, in that moment, whatever it is, the hot hand, the form, whoever it is, best compliments Roberto Puncic, and then hoping that the midfield and Ilya has a good game and Roger Espinoza's back.
So you mentioned at one point in the last show, we were talking about who are the top 4 teams in the league. We were debating Seattle mainly and the Eastern Conference teams with a little Portland mention. You said SKC at the end. Me and Charlie yelled about it, and then we moved on. We have some good hate mail that Charlie's going to get on Thursday. Do you think they are an MLS Cup contender?
Yes, absolutely, I do. I think that the thing with Sporting Kansas City is Alan Pulido alone gets them there. I think that they have enough throughout the rest of the team, and we talk about depth. They have a lot of depth. Maybe it's not at center back right now as far as quality goes, but if he and Roger are healthy, absolutely they are. When Pulido's in there, and had he played a full season, he would rightfully be in the MVP conversation. He's on the outside looking in right now. But if he was around and he didn't go with the Mexico duty, he didn't get hurt. Those are big ifs. I understand that part of it. But his level of talent and the way that he changes the game for the other attacking pieces that they have makes them a team that can, more often than not, win games 3-2 than the flip side, which are their struggles defensively. I think it's going to be a team nobody wants to see in the playoffs, because him, Johnny Russell, Gerso, and then whoever else is working in that attack that they bring in is scary and should be scary. He is an incredible player. And I think next year, if he's healthy and around, he will be an MVP candidate.
Boom.
Okay.
That's what I think. All right. That's we're over hour 15, which is normally when Anders makes a stop. That's it for us. There's a bunch of games midweek, I think. I don't know. I'm getting confused at this point.
There are midweek games. There are many. Yeah.
There's like decision day
on Wednesday.
Presented by AT&T next Sunday. Pre, mid, post-game shows. We'll have all the coverage. We'll set the MLS Cup playoff field. We'll figure out where this thing is going, and then it'll get fun because it'll be single elimination all the way to the end.
Vote.
Yes, vote. That's the end of it. Go take the time to do it. Tuesday's the day. Or you can early vote today if you, I don't know, maybe if you're on the West Coast and you listen to this at 2 p.m. your time. Either way, go do it. We'll see you on Thursday, everybody. Enjoy your week.